You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Arun Vanagopal. It's been almost 80 years since the U.S. government forced an estimated 120,000 Japanese Americans into internment camps.
When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, our west coast became a potential combat zone. Living in that zone were more than 100,000 persons of Japanese ancestry, two-thirds of them American citizens, one-third aliens. We knew that some among them were potentially dangerous, but no one knew what would happen among this concentrated population if Japanese forces should try to invade our shores. Military authorities therefore determined that all of them, citizens and aliens alike, would have to move.
After 3 long years, Japanese Americans were released from the camps and allowed to return to their homes and businesses, many of which had been looted and destroyed in their absence. The U.S. Commission on Wartime Relocation and Internment of Civilians illustrated the damages by asking, what if vandals broke into your home, sprayed graffiti, and ransacked your property simply because of race, gender, or religious affiliation? For years, the Japanese American community campaigned for a federal apology and compensation for the property and time they lost while in the camps. Finally, in 1988, Ronald Reagan signed the Civil Liberties Act, which formally apologized to Japanese Americans and granted $20,000 in restitution to each person interned during World War II.
The nation was then at war, struggling for its survival, and it's not for us today to pass judgment upon those who may have made mistakes while engaged in that great struggle. Yet we must recognize that the internment of Japanese Americans was just that, a mistake. For throughout the war, Japanese Americans in the tens of thousands remained utterly loyal to the United States.
Most of these internments happened in California, but up until now, the state of California has failed to issue its own formal apology. That's expected to change this week. On Thursday, one day after the 78th anniversary of the day FDR signed an executive order which authorized Japanese American incarceration, the state of California is issuing an apology through the passage of a bipartisan bill.
I introduced House Resolution 77 because, you know, I've been very concerned with the striking parallels that I and many other Japanese Americans have been seeing between what happened to Japanese Americans and what we see happening today. I wanted California to lead by example, by acknowledging past mistakes, to learn the lessons of history so that we make sure that history doesn't repeat itself.
That was Al Muratsuchi, the assemblyman who introduced the resolution to California's state legislature. And while the measure is receiving widespread support, for some it was long overdue. For more on this, we're joined by Dr. Karen Korematsu, founder and executive director of the Fred T. Korematsu Institute. Her father, Fred Korematsu, resisted evacuation orders during World War II and was the plaintiff in the landmark Korematsu versus United States case in the Supreme Court. Also with us is Kristen Hayashi, director of collections management and access and a curator at the Japanese American National Museum. Her family was also incarcerated during World War II. Kristen and Karen, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Korematsu, what does an apology from California mean to you today?
Well, it's very important that we remind everyone of the mistakes of the past because we keep repeating them. We hope that by bringing to light what this day represents, that the when the executive order 9066 was issued by Roosevelt, that it was not only a violation of due process of law, but it was also a violation of human rights. And we want people to remember, to honor, to educate, and also to advocate for everyone's civil rights, because, you know, it wasn't done in 1942, and we still have those challenges now.
Karen, we heard a little bit from that propaganda film earlier, but remind our listeners what the government's rationale was for incarcerating Japanese Americans.
Well, the rationale at the time, because it was led by General John DeWitt, who was the head of the Fourth Army in the San Francisco Presidio, was basically he was saying you couldn't separate the sheep from the goats. And you couldn't tell who was loyal and disloyal, which was absolutely, you know, not true. I mean, it was fabricated. It was lies. You know, at the time, you know, the government already had the reports, you know, from the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, of all people, to say that they had already rounded up a couple thousand really Japanese nationals that they thought were in question. That also they had the report, the Ringel report from the U.S. Navy that stated that there was never any evidence of any spying or espionage. So this was all fabricated. But, you know, also the backstory was agriculture, that people had cried out because the Japanese had done so well in agriculture up and down the West Coast. Their cry was, oh, they're taking away our jobs, which is a repeat of over our history, what we're even hearing now.
Kristen, your family, your relatives were incarcerated at these internment camps like Karen's. I'm curious, is your family still feeling the effects of that period to this day?
Well, I think that the evidence of intergenerational trauma is real. And I would say anecdotally that I feel those effects. I think my grandparents felt the need to prove that they were American in every way and to raise their children that way. And I think the consequence of that is that we lost the language and ties to our Japanese heritage and culture. And I think that there's a lot of healing that still is going on and a lot of seeking of information about where we come from and what the experience was of our relatives who were incarcerated during World War II.
Karen, did you have a similar experience in your family?
Yes. I mean, I'm much older, but it's still from generation to generation. That's very true. And actually, I never even learned about my father's Supreme Court case until I was in high school. And there was this code of silence not to talk about the incarceration because there had been so much trauma. You know, people had lost their dignity because they were basically accused of being spies, and it was their fault for the bombing of Pearl Harbor, just like what people experienced after 9/11, 2001.
Now, President Reagan, when he issued a federal apology, he said, as we heard earlier, it sounded like he was kind of hedging. On one hand, he acknowledged that this was a mistake, but he said it's not for us today to pass judgment upon those who may have made mistakes while engaged in that great struggle. How did that come off to you, Karen?
Well, at least what we had was an apology, an official apology from the president on behalf of all citizens, and that's what he said. We knew that it was a start of what we had to continue as far as education, down the road. But that was, that's still kind of the feeling, now. That's why this assembly bill that Almer Suchi and others is so important, because we need to remind people that we have not learned our lessons of history.
Kristen, it was the federal government who authorized the internment, but California state government also implemented policies targeting them. Could you remind us what exactly the state government did?
Sure. Well, the incarceration was just one event of a long history of discrimination towards Japanese immigrants and their descendants. The California legislature passed an alien land law in 1913, which prevented aliens ineligible from citizenship, so Japanese immigrants, from purchasing land. And that legislation became more stringent in the 1920s, to the point where in some cases it was difficult to lease land. And this was all with the intent of hindering social mobility of Japanese immigrants and their descendants. There were racial housing covenants as well that prevented Japanese from purchasing homes, in areas that they desired. And that was, again, just this long history of de jure and de facto discrimination.
Karen, right now we are going through a period of a broadening conversation about reparations and who deserves to receive reparations. Japanese American Americans who were victims of the internment did receive $20,000 each. Where do you think The conversation should be going now in terms of reparations for other groups who've been on the receiving end of racism and bigotry on the part of the government.
One of the points that I make with the redress and the reparations is that you had to be living at the time that the Civil Liberties Act was signed in 1988 in order to receive the reparations. And if you even died the day before, then you were basically out of luck. So people, you know, like my grandparents who had been, you know, imprisoned, the families did not receive any type of reparations, but the reparations wasn't the important point that was significant to them. It was the apology, the official apology. But now I think this is we need to address for our other communities, especially our African American community, the same point about an apology, about reparations, and how that will work. They need to create a commission to do that kind of report and research of how this would work, because it's going to be much more complicated. At the time, President Carter had issued the War Relocation Authority Commission to do just that, to research how the Japanese Americans had been, treated during that time. So it's going to take be a long road, but it is something that we need to pursue, because if we don't address the racial prejudice in this country, then we're never going to be able to achieve racial equity.
Kristen, are Japanese American activists and community leaders in conversation with African Americans about this process?
I think so. And I think there's been a lot of support for, as Karen is talking about, investigation into, the consequences of these actions that the federal government has taken towards various ethnic groups over the course of its history. So I think, there's a lot of support for further study of this.
Karen, the fact that now we have, an administration which is largely not aligned with these kinds of policies. How does that affect the conversation when it comes to these historic injustices? Do you see it that it accelerates the need for these kinds of reparations and gestures, or that it sort of stifles it?
Well, we need to accelerate it. No matter the hurdles that have to be crossed, we can't stop. We can't give up hope. My father said, to stand up for what is right. And you need to keep pursuing, this call for social justice, because, that's what we need to do to make change in this country.
And your father, he refused to go to the internment camps. He was subsequently arrested, then found himself in the center of this infamous Supreme Court case, which ultimately found it was legal to hold Japanese Americans in internment camps. Many years later, quite recently, Chief Justice Roberts had something to say about that. What did his statement mean to you, and how relevant do you think it was for this conversation?
Well, my honest opinion is it was as basically a throwaway. I mean, it was to us a retaliation of Justice Sotomayor's scathing dissent in Trump versus Hawaii. It's an amicus brief that I submitted my name to show the dangers of the overreaching of power, and that to remind the courts of the mistakes in the past. All Justice Roberts did was uphold the Muslim travel ban, marginalize another ethnicity, and dishonored my father all in one breath.
Kristen, do you think this resolution could be a model for other states?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, I think it's a very welcomed gesture, albeit overdue, long overdue. But I think it brings attention to the past injustices that, the California legislature was implicit in supporting. And so I think it does make an important statement, especially today, for the California legislature to say that this was wrong, the forced removal and the subsequent incarceration of Japanese Americans during World War II, and this should not ever happen again to any other group, I think is making a very important statement.
Does California owe survivors monetary compensation in addition to this apology?
Well, you know, that would be, I mean, certainly the right thing to do. I think it would be a bit of a challenge at this point because, you know, the reparations went to those people that were still living. And to try to make this retroactive would be a big challenge. I would rather to have really the state to put more money in education. Because now that we have this assembly bill, we hopefully will be passed. How is that going to trickle down to, especially K through 12? Because even when I was growing up, there was nothing in the books about the Japanese American incarceration. And so it's, you know, if we're going to learn from our mistakes, then we need to start teaching these lessons at a very young age.
Dr. Karen Korematsu is the founder and executive director of the Fred T. Korematsu Institute, and Kristen Hayashi is the director of collections management and access and a curator at the Japanese American National Museum. Thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.